Moncrief on News Talk.
The great beauty of pop music is that it is a joy machine.
You've got the coolest guy on the planet saying, "Where's the pop tunes?"
That's Kylie. You can watch the entire series now on Netflix. James Dempsey is here once again. So, James, is it what you expect it to be like?
I suppose it is kind of what I expected it to be like. Like, Kylie is kind of an interesting pop diva in the canon of pop divas because she is like somewhat a queen of reinvention, but by doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, she found the thing that really worked for her, you know, for her, and then she stuck with it, you know, through hell or high water. But like, she has earned her place as the quote unquote, I think it's Impossible Princess is the nickname they've given her. Of course, much other ones have been given to her in her time as well. And this documentary explores that. All in, I think a huge credit goes to the director of this, who's an Irish filmmaker named Michael Hart. And he has his hands over some of like the biggest documentaries of the last 10 years, I would say, mostly as editor rather than director, but he has edited still the Michael J. Fox movie, Beckham, Deaf Presidents Now, a TV on the radio favourite, Don't F with Cats on Netflix. Yeah. And he also directed one about Memories of a Murder, the Nielsen tape. And all in, this is a really well-made piece of pop music documentary, right? The thing about pop, obviously, as a genre is, like, it's not as credible, quote unquote, as rock or, you know, jazz or whatever, rap, etc. It rarely is seen as cool because the people who traditionally like pop are girls and gay boys. So yeah. It doesn't have that like bona fides, you know, sheen of this is like edgy stuff. So if you go into this documentary looking for edginess, like the closest you get is a mention of The Edge when Kylie's mother mentions meeting him at some point, right? But like, that's it. This is bubblegum pop and an exploration of someone who went from being one of the biggest soap stars in the world to being the biggest pop star in the world. So if you are looking for like warts and all and like, you know, drugs and sex and rock and roll, that comes in the form of Michael Hutchence, but like not for an awful lot of it, right?
Yeah.
All in, this is part of this kind of, you know, new wave of documentaries where the subject is a key component of it, right? But because Kylie's lifestyle, as far as we can glean from this documentary, is relatively kind of sane and normal and clean living and pleasant, it's not like she's avoiding talking about the darker things because I just don't think they're there.
Yeah.
Right?
So, well, that doesn't make it a very compelling story then.
I actually found it quite compelling simply because, like, you know, when I think back to Kylie, I always remember, and, you know, I'm always mentioning family members of mine and their connection to TV shows. And my sister is the one who gets the least mention. And she had, like, a VHS of Kylie material, you know, music videos and, let's say, the wedding episode of Neighbours recorded from the 90s that would go into the VCR every now and again and get played. And as the youngest sibling in the family, I would, well, also, I was quite keen to watch it, but I just consumed it. So Kylie was this like touchstone for, let's say, a generation of teenagers and younger people in the late 80s, early 90s. And you watch her, you know, I think where the documentary is at its most interesting is just watching the casualness with which, one, her music and pop as a genre was completely and utterly swept away by the press. And two, her attempts to circumvent that as she becomes, you know, as she gets a little bit older. I mean, obviously still in her 20s here, but a little bit older and wants to stretch herself creatively. And what we heard in the clip there is Nick Cave, who recorded this very famous single with her in 1995, which is a murder ballad, whatever that is, right? But when he recorded that with her, you know, Nick Cave is and remains this very, I mean, he's probably best known then, like, for his association with Peaky Blinders, but like he's known as this like Australian rock star, and his record label didn't.
Well, that's because that's what he is.
Sure, yeah, right. Well, what I mean by that is, you know, suffused with all those layers of cool, how cool it is to be a rock star, right? And his record label didn't want him to work with Kylie at all, but he found her very charming and interesting. And as you heard him on the clip there, he really talks about pop music in this very, you know, very glorifying way, as in this this idea that for thousands of people, the first concert they might ever go to is a rock or is a pop concert,
yeah.
because often it is a genre that appeals to younger audiences. And for your first time, you never forget. And it's this incredibly life-changing moment to go to your first ever concert, and how pop music brings great joy into people's lives, and how Kylie, as someone who has, you know, been releasing regularly since the late 80s, is so entwined in let's say the European understanding of pop music, although she has broken the US twice and won 2 Grammys, but still a couple of Grammys anyway, but still that she has just sort of been part and parcel of like so many people's pop music pantheon listening, that she just is this permanent feature in our lives. And then of course it goes in the third episode of 3 to talk about her very public cancer diagnosis when she was 35, when she had breast cancer, her battle with that, and then goes on to reveal more about her personal life that I won't go into at this point, just because I think people will enjoy it more in the documentary.
Sure.
All in, I think it's a really well-made documentary. It zips along at a great pace. The only quibble I'd have is like Pete Waterman, the music producer, talks about her in the first episode of like, as if she arrives at his door to record a thing in 40 minutes. Despite the fact that she had already had a number one single in Australia that had been produced by somebody his record company had loaned out to someone else. So I don't think she was quite this like, you know, complete utter.
Well, he'd want to take credit for
exactly,
that.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? But like all in, I think it's fun, it's frothy, it like a good pop song, it has highs, it has lows right at the right time. It understands exactly what the audience wants and it delivers it.
Yeah. But I'm not getting the sense of just in the narrative of there's no great struggle, Kylie, it's obstacle, apart from like snippy press. But I mean, other than that, there wasn't any great
I guess, right, the various struggles are, first of all, defining her credibility right at the very beginning, being called, the singing budgie by the British press, and pilloried from left to right. Then it's sort of her romantic relationships with Jason Donovan, her co-star from Neighbours, and then her romance with Michael Hutchence for 2 years. And she talks about how he was this incredible force in her life and that she's been trying to recreate that relationship ever since and has never quite managed it.
Okay, yeah, bad, yeah. I hope she's not going out with anyone now.
Yeah, hopefully. Then we talk about her attempt to redefine herself as an indie artist towards the late 90s and how that completely flops. Then her reinvention as in her return to the source of pop music, and that helps to reinvent her again. Then her cancer diagnosis, and then other things that I won't get into because they're kind of a revelation. But yeah, it's more just following the path of her life, and obviously she is very successful. So it's nice to see someone doing well for themselves.
Doing well for themselves. Finally got a good job. Right, 2 weeks in August is the name of our next show. It's running Saturdays 9:15 on BBC One. Here's a clip.
Please do not drink the water and do not put the paper in the toilet. The plumbing is very old in the island. Please use the bins.
Okay.
Absolutely, for sure.
We'll definitely do that.
Thank you.
Right, so they're in Greece.
Yes,
a group of friends.
Yeah, a group of friends. You know, three college friends, or uni, I guess, to use British vernacular. Friends have grown up, and they're now in their early 40s. One of them is married and has a couple of children. Another one has remarried to a younger wife. Four of them, I should say. There's another one, and then another one who are both single, but they're the kind of perennial single friends amongst the group. And they head off on a 2 week long holiday to all share a massive villa on one of the Greek islands, which is not actually named as far as I recall. And it basically is the White Lotus effect, shall we say, right?
Yeah.
As in, let's explore the different dynamics that you get with a group of people here, we'll say early 40s, on a except perhaps what's different from the White Lotus is, while the different kind of threads in the White Lotus occasionally come together, they're normally kind of separate stories that sort of come together with a big finish. Whereas here, they are in a shared house, so there's no escaping the dynamic that you get. Now, all in, it comes from Catherine Shepherd, who I know better as an actress. She was one of the leads in Sally Forever, where she played the lead opposite Julia Davis. And she's probably also well known for Peep Show, where she was the shoe saleswoman who falls in love with Mark, if people remember her. But she has, you know, she was known as an actress for playing these kind of awkward, socially awkward characters. And she definitely funnels that vibe into her writing as well, because she wrote on this and The Shrink Next Door as well. And all in, it is good. Like, it is, but it's a much more subtle version of The White Lotus. Like, if you're looking for real obvious laugh out loud moments, I don't think there's quite as many of them as you would get in a season of The White Lotus.
Yeah, and there isn't a murder here, is there?
Well, not yet.
No, okay.
But I wouldn't count my chickens. Yeah. But it is suffused with a bit of kind of, you know, magical realism, let's say, in that one of the characters, the lead character, Jessica Raine, is seeing all of these kind of Greek mythological figures throughout her stay on the island, and they are somewhat informing the story as well, a little bit, right? Now, all in, it is a really good character study of the different travails that, you know, 40-somethings might find themselves in. I particularly like there's the relationship between the two singles, Hugh and Antonia, Nat, played by Leila Farzad, and Jacob, played by Hugh Skinner. They're in the two single-bedded room, you know, they share two single beds until his sort of very early boyfriend arrives unannounced, and she now finds herself sleeping on the couch effectively, right? So there's also this, you know, there's a shifting kind of narrative the whole time of people having secrets and what they do with these secrets and hoarding these secrets and deploying these secrets at exactly the right time to cause the absolute maximum amount of damage. Like, it is a kind of, you know, it's a very tongue-in-cheek, snarky kind of show about discomfort and awkwardness, which is not everybody's cup of tea by any mind. And as it is running for 8 episodes, you know, that's a lot to stretch out, you know, when the BBC could do this in 4, shall we say. But as I say, it's 2 weeks in August, not 1 week. So we'll see where it goes. But certainly a very promising start, because it's very well acted. It's very beautifully shot on Malta, pretending to be Greece. But all in, it'll you know, if you're looking for something before you go on your own summer holidays, it's a nice little precursor.
Yeah, especially if you're going away with a group of friends.
Indeed.
Perhaps you might regret that decision. Right, our third show is The Burrows. You can stream the entire first season now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
I'm an engineer. You're a doctor. Maybe you can tell me what the hell I'm looking at.
What is that?
It's the blood of the creature that killed Jack.
The what?
No. I know how it sounds.
Like you've lost your mind.
Yes. So that's Alfred Molina there doing his American accent. This is Duffer Brothers stuff, really.
It was produced by them rather than made by them. But yeah, it's right in their kind of wheelhouse of, let's say, a group of people on, you know, obviously Stranger Things is a young group of young people. This is a group of older people getting involved with some supernatural things that go bump in the night. But it's made by a pair named Jeffrey Addis and Will Matthews. They're kind of the king of flops, to be honest with you. They won an Emmy for The Dark Crystal, The Age of Resistance. And they wrote also The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim, which was a recently released animated Lord of the Rings movie, lost about $10 million at the box office, but was well received. But yeah, they're kind of the king of flops, is what I'm going to say. So as we heard there, Alfred Molina and Dennis O'Hare, it's about a group of people in this retirement community in New Mexico. Alfred Molina is sort of our introductory character to that. He's Sam, who's just being deposited by his daughter. He's recently lost his wife, played by Malcolm in the Middle's Jane Kaczmarek, although she appears constantly in dreams and stuff. And he befriends a group until one night he finds... this is not a spoiler. One of them is... Well, we heard in the clip. loses his life to some sort of creepy monster-type creature.
Okay.
And that kicks off a mystery whereby our group of retirees are investigating what's going on, including among them Alfre Woodard and Gina Davis. Now, all in, I found this a very frustrating show because it started on this real high in that classic kind of like Stranger Things type way. It has this great, real gripping mystery right at the beginning. And then at every reveal for me, it sort of lost its way. And my main issue with it is there's a couple of villains in it who are really preposterous and rather silly. The monster, the creature-y, feature-y kind of stuff works. And the set design is really good. I think they make great use of their New Mexico set and location. But like at every reveal, I was sort of less enthusiastic and less interested with it. And it ends clearly on not a cliffhanger, but rather a nod to a potential second season. And, you know, I'm not even sure where they were going exactly with this one. So I'm even less enthused about where they might go with that one. All in, like, if you're you're looking for like a sci-fi romp to fill your days before the big Steven Spielberg movie comes out, Disclosure Day next month, then fine, you'll have some fun here. But like, you'd almost be better off just rewatching the first season of Stranger Things.
Yeah, you just said that was rubbish in so many words. Another flop from the Flop Brothers.
I liked it at the beginning.
Opening titles are very good. Right, so the three shows are Kylie, you can watch the entire series now on Netflix. 2 weeks in August, that's on Saturdays at 9:15 on BBC One. And The Burrows, you can stream the entire first season now on Netflix. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.